Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English.
And I've got the wrong microphone turned up here.
There we go.
Okay, we're going to have to do that again, ladies and gentlemen, so we're going to do it again.
All right, here we go.
Okay, I hear a roaring noise.
Yes, I believe it's the other microphone.
Yes, it was the other microphone that was roaring. Okay, now then, let's try to do this again. Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we actually managed to get that done, and that was pretty amazing by itself.
Sometimes we are able and capable of saying our own names.
Well, saying our own names to the appropriate foam balls and turning off the other foam balls and getting all the other knobs and switches done while setting up everything while a lawyer is leaving the room.
Yes.
That's exciting. You ought to come in here and try it sometime. Well, you do, don't you?
Anyway, I do, actually. Yes,
this is the Personal often. Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach has a dual identity. Da-da-da-dum. Our not very secret identity is not only are we the talking heads, I guess, the talking mouths in this case, the voices of a radio program. I like that.
The voices of a radio. I think we're voices of people that come through a radio program.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, you know,
the program itself.
A spokesman for the government today said a voice, a talking head would be like on television because you can see, all you can see is the head and it's talking.
I can see the government as an institution. It needs a spokesman. But the radio program, I think of as if we weren't here, it would just be 2 hours of silence.
If we weren't here, where would we be?
Wherever I go, I'm here. But
yes, I've
this
noticed
particular
that.
Here is the question.
Well, then they would simply hear a blast from the past. They would hear something historical that we were saying. Anyway, the two voices of this radio program are also belong to the principals of an investment advisory firm, and that's in Salado, that's registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. And somebody asked me why I need to say that, and it's because if you want to file a complaint, that's who you file the complaint with. If you want to say something nice, I guess you could call up the SEC and say those guys are really nice guys on the radio.
Yeah.
That would shock the SEC because all they hear is complaints. Anyway, telephone number's in here if you'd like to join with us, presuming that today is February 22nd. Which seems like it ought to be some kind of auspicious day, 2-2-2-14, would be 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. And we have somebody on 773-1400 waiting
That's
for us
really
right
weird.
Now.
So caller on 773-1400, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've enjoyed y'all's show for the many years now, and I never get the call because I'm sort of going into work.
Mm.
And I don't want the call on that damn little phone because it's texting and all that
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So finally I got to my landline phone today, and I just finished a bite of cherry pie in honor of, as you well know who. But here's my question.
Jorge.
Here we go. I want your personal opinions on where you think the stock market country is really going. I've listened to so
many the stock market country?
Well, the business. How much does the Fed do? How much do we really know what's going on? Every business show gives you a slant, a swing. And I haven't really ever heard you all come out and say, so where are we starting into Texas Independence Day week after next? What do we need to do as little sheep sometimes following all this? What is your opinion of the world today?
My opinion is you're listening to way too many commentators.
you're looking for a bellwether.
Yes. You can listen, but I'll just give you some advice if you're really interested in that. It won't necessarily ease your confusion, but at least you will have much more unslanted, factual opinion. Read The Economist.
Yeah. They're a British publication. They have their own biases, but they're rarely our own. I also read the BBC.
You read the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation?
Yes, I read it online.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I get asked often, people ask me, why are you reading the BBC? Do they, are they slanted one way or the other? And I say, yes, it's just not slanted in a way that we're used to. So they're slanted
so
in a British way.
That's a good thing to talk about. It's a very big subject, as you're probably aware, right?
All right.
Well, what I'm after is... Well, I listen to all those business shows. It's like a soap opera to me.
It is. You're right. But everybody, and let me give you a little story about those. Everyone that you listen to has an agenda. A lot of times they don't even know they have an agenda. But they do. They have an agenda, and they've forgotten. I mean, Rush Limbaugh clearly has an agenda. It's often, in my opinion, not what he portrays it to be. It's a different one. But he did say something that was very, very, very important. Follow the money. Determine how anyone you listen to makes their money, how they are compensated. And that takes some digging sometimes because they like to hide it. And you will understand their motivation. That's pure economics. It's behavioral economics. It is what drives the train in literally everything I know of, with exception of those people who already have, by their definition, enough. Those people are driven by a higher set of rewards, but they're still driven by their rewards.
We're covering one half of your question, which is the bias. Everyone has a bias.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to the other half in just a minute. But every individual has a bias. If they claim not to, they're either lying or ignorant. They don't understand themselves. Everyone is biased by their own experiences.
And all we can choose to do is choose our biases. And very frankly, I'm just going to tell you, and it's tooting our horn just a little bit, but I don't suspect that you're going to be somebody who will cause us economic benefit specifically. We are a fee-only investment advisory firm, and as a result, our bias is really, really, really simple when it comes to money. We would like our clients to have more of it because we get a less than 1% chunk of what they have invested every year. We charge a fee. And as a result of that, it is in our best interest that our clients become more wealthy. It's that simple. We're highly biased in that direction.
Yeah.
And I do all kinds of weird things that I didn't used to do when I was a stockbroker, when my bias was towards selling stuff.
This comes back to the term trust. The only person or people that you can trust in the world are the people, or long-term trust anyway, are the people whose long-term agenda is the same as your own.
Who said that?
That's some old bald man
that
at some point. He's sitting across from me at this point. And I have found that to be true every time that I apply it. So when you consider the bias of the media, what is their agenda should be the first question. What is it that they are getting out of this? What are we getting out of this program? And we do speak to...
Not at all sure what we get.
I can give some definition. We rarely get clients out of it. That's not why we do it. We do occasionally get clients out of it. It's not... Very often.
It is not a cost-effective method.
No, not very good marketing in that sense. The other sense, we talk to a lot of the people that listen to this program are our clients.
Yeah, now there's the motivation. Yeah.
So we are disseminating our voices and our opinions and our advice in a very broad sense to our clientele. At the same time, we're able to give an education that I think is sorely lacking. And that is at least our conscious agenda for what we're doing here, but everybody also has a subconscious agenda. What you're doing and what you're saying you're doing may not be the same thing even to yourself, and that's where it gets really complicated. Understanding motivations and understanding agendas are the only ways that you can understand if you can trust what somebody is saying.
And very frankly, sir, I can answer your question about the status of the stock market in just a relatively, and we could go on about it for the rest of 2 hours, which we probably will now, but but I can answer it very simply. There's a lot of really, really, really good studies out there, academic studies, and they all tend to agree on something. And that is the stock market of the United States is driven long-term by its forward price-to-earnings ratio.
Right.
And the forward earnings is what the consensus of all the major corporations in the United States expect to earn profit, their pre-tax profit, a year from now. In other words, we look at right now, we're looking at the end of, we're looking out at 2015 and saying, what is the consensus, not only of what the companies say they're going to earn, but of what the analysts who study the companies say those companies are going to earn a year from now. Now, on any given company, they could be off.
But the consensus tends to be pretty right.
The consensus, at least since 2000, has been conservative. They've actually tended to do better than that. So,
and the reason why 2000 is because the laws changed in 2000 that said if you were consistently over estimating the returns of any
certain companies,
corporation that you may have interest in, you could go to jail.
Yeah, and so the current price-to-earnings ratio, forward price-to-earnings ratio of the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index, we'll just use that one because that's widely published, is about 15% below its long-term trend. And again, stack of good papers, all of which agree with each other, which is important, that say that these things tend to follow long-term trends. They tend to revert, mean is another term, they tend to revert to the mean. So what we would expect is first you have to factor out inflation, a real growth in the total return of the stock market of its long-term average over the next decade.
Let me ask one quick question and I'll let you go.
Okay.
All interesting. If I brought money to buy Coca-Cola, say I bought 500 shares and roughly it's a little over $37 a share.
Mm-hmm.
What would that cost me through your company? Can you do that over there?
It would cost you more money than you could afford to pay.
We don't do individual
trade stocks. We're not a brokerage firm. We're an investment advisory firm.
Oh.
We manage people's portfolios, and we do this inside of custodial care. We don't actually have contact with the money. It's at the custodian. And we use funds, not individual stocks. Now, we do have some clients who have individual stocks, and we basically do that at whatever the lowest cost is that the custodians we use will charge, whatever that is. We don't pay any attention to it. Because it's not something we are actually doing, and we do it as a favor to them, and it's an exception, and these people generally have very large portfolios that are invested, for lack of a better term, scientifically. If you were to buy Coca-Cola, you would be speculating.
Yeah, no matter
and
how
we just
good,
don't do that.
No matter how good any individual company is, one person at that company that doesn't even have to have a leadership role, mm-hmm. they don't have to have any authority, can destroy the company. And if we think about, you sound like you may be old enough to remember the company Union Carbide.
Vaguely, uh-huh.
Yeah, this was a company that was one of the largest in the United States. It's right up there with the size that Coca-Cola is now. And it was destroyed because of an accident that took place and blew up a cyanide mm-hmm. tank in Bhopal, India.
And the guy who tied down the safety valve wasn't even, he was Indian.
Right. He wasn't even a full-time employee.
And so Enron, prior to its sudden demise, was one of the highest rated companies out there. So
Lehman Brothers.
Yeah. So the point is that we do portfolio management and to some degree financial planning for people. We do this on a fee-only basis. We do it as fiduciaries, acting in their best interest. And here's the key. If we're going to do all of those things, by definition, we won't poll. Because we have, let's say, there are 5,000 mutual funds, all protected by the Investment Company Act of 1940 from the creditors of any of the associated institutions, which is obviously a good place to put your money, where if an institution, if an advisor or a custodian or somebody away. So, and they have managers who make the better managers make a lot more than our firm makes in personal income every year. They're good, and they have entire staffs of people. And generally speaking, they only research a very narrow area of the stock market, and they have real-time phenomenal data flow. The average person looking at that data flow has a master's degree in finance and CFA after his name, and there's just no way in the world that we could rationally compete with them. So what we do is we've discovered it's less expensive to hire, in essence, a manager for a mid-cap value fund than it is to try to trade the stocks, not to mention the fact that undoubtedly if there are all those thousands of managers out there and we carefully choose the top, let's say, 4% of them to use, we're going to get a better result than if we try to choose the stocks. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's not fun. Sometimes it's downright boring. But you know what? That's the interesting thing. Exciting, and your portfolio probably should not be used in the same sentence very often.
Yeah, I understand with that. And another thing, let me just get off my chest while I'm asking. Mm-hmm. You know, all these different shows and people and gurus and CEOs come on. Who, you know, we're more worried about the stock market, technically, sometimes, than the real people. And everything, oh, the wall, it's down 118 points. What will happen? I think that's really phooey. From the standpoint that who cares?
You got the right attitude there. Right. Well, and let me we generally don't even know at the end of the day what the stock market
right.
did.
I mean, it's legalized gambling any way you look at it. More people are starting to jump off buildings now. I noticed the other day they pinpointed them. A lot of them from Jimmy Dimon's company.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, if you think about what an index is, and this is actually one of the subjects I wanted to bring up. So you're doing this properly. Every index that's ever been made as far as tracking the stock market has been made by a media, news media group. Dow Jones Industrial Average was made by editors of Dow Jones.
But there are other companies who make them up just for the purpose of selling the data.
Right. Well, and if you think of the major provider of that data right now, it's Bloomberg, which is a news media company.
Right.
If you think of every major, S&P is a Standard & Poor's, is
right.
a magazine company. Dow Jones is now purchased by Rupert Murdoch's company and is what used to be the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, he literally owns the Dow Jones Index.
Right. And the reason why an index exists, this is people, you say, what does the number mean when it goes up and down? The first indexes were created by the Dow Jones Group. And they were created.
Well, they were created by Dow and Jones, specifically.
Exactly,
yes.
And they were created because they were printing lots and lots, just like now, of stocks.
Literally, lots of stocks.
Yes, lots and odd lots and even lots.
Right.
And it had the buy, the sell, the bid and the ask price. It had the spread, and just like in the Wall Street Journal today, you
just
flip
like
back
horse
to
horse racing. Is it a mutter? Does it run well and fair?
Right.
You short term, you're right.
Yeah. So
short term, the stock market is a lottery.
Yes. So looking at the back of the paper, you can't make a headline out of that. You can't say, except if you want to advertise for a single company, unless you can say, what's the average of this stuff? Well, back in the 1870s, when Dow Jones got together and said, we need something to make headlines. The highest level of calculation was the abacus. And they needed to be able to get this data together by the following morning so that they could print the headline. So they said, how do we do this? And they started by taking, I believe they started with 17 companies. They said, what are the biggest companies out there? We'll choose 17 and we're just going to average the movement, not with any weights, not with any extra special calculations, just going to say, this one moved up 0.2, this one moved down 0.1. That's an average of moving up 0.1. But they needed a number to start with. And the number they started with was 10. So in order to say the market has moved, they said, all right, the starting number is 10, and if it went up 0.1, then it's 10.1. That's how they said, as far as percentages, they said, okay, there it is. So it's an arbitrary number, and that index, by the way, still exists. It's the Dow Jones Transportation Index, because at that point, the largest companies in the United States were railroad companies. So that concept of they just want a headline, it doesn't have anything to do with reality so much, in that if one of those companies failed, they would just simply take it out of the index and replace it with another one. So it's not like it really shows what the companies inside it are doing. It only shows what they want it to show, which is we need a headline to say what the overall market is doing. And over time, they've added more indexes and they put more stocks in it. They've got different weightings. And
I've got a little piece of trivia here that I think is fascinating. The Dow was Charles Henry Dow.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people know that. Edward Jones. They were not the people who conceived of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, nor were they the people who financed the gathering of the information, because there was a three-part partnership in that publication.
Right.
Charles Bergstresser was the leader. So
he's the reason it should have been
the Bergstresser Industrial Average, but for some reason or another, their marketing ability.
I will tell you why. Because the money really came from Dow and Jones, and Bergstresser was the news guy.
Really?
Yeah. Well, Edward Jones was not into publication. I mean, he did it, but his real job was in actually trading stocks.
Well, I actually read that they were cash poor. They'd run out of money. Bergstresser bought into it and came up with the idea. They're the ones who went out and actually did it, but it. They actually looked at the name and said, Bergstresser?
Yeah,
no, that ain't going to cut it.
So the Dow Jones Industrial Average was almost the Bergstresser Dow and Jones Industrial Average.
Well, it could just been the Bergstresser, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny because I do have my little fund with Ed Jones, Mr. Ed.
Well, that's a different Edward Jones.
I know. Oh, it is. Right.
Yeah, this that Edward Jones, Edward Jones and Company out of St. Louis is a retail brokerage firm, and they practice the way a lot of retail brokerage firms do by pretending, which is just, and I'm not hitting them, pretending to be working for you when in fact they're working for themselves.
There you go. I found that out the other day. Let me ask one more question with my Coke. Don't buy it, but drink it. Is that what you said? No.
No. You can gamble if you want to.
Okay.
And it's not a, you know, if it's a hobby, and you're getting good entertainment value out of buying and selling a few stocks, well, you're right there with the other rich people in history.
There's a couple of cans of Coke Zero sitting on the countertop right here in the studio.
Full disclosure. Yeah.
So we are investing in our.
Well, actually, the issue that. You know, Coke could go to zero, is that you mentioned just
right. Right. It is Coke
right
Zero.
There. Coke
right
Zero.
There. Coke
Zero. There's an indication. So,
listen, I enjoy y'all's show and listen to you. And I'm glad I got to talk, like I said, but I listen to it on Saturday all the time.
So. Well, thank you for calling. You had some good questions.
We may need to give you a medical warning about that.
Right.
prolonged listening to the show may require psychiatric care.
All right.
Have a good day. Bye-bye. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And we are shameless capitalists. I don't know if we're shameless, but we're...
I have no shame.
Right. Anyway, we're per capitalists. And as a result, we do believe in advertising, as long as people know it's advertising. And we are broadcasting courtesy of KTEM. And KTEM has sponsors so that it can actually make money, which is the purpose of it being here. And so we're going to play some messages from those sponsors. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And that's all dependent on whether or not it's February 22nd of 2014. Because if it is, then you can call those numbers, and that is a valid thing to do, and you can actually talk to us on the radio. And if it's some other day, then don't bother, because we're not really here. We're somewhere else.
If it is not 2-2-2.
Yeah, you're listening to a voice out of the past, if otherwise. Well, the headline in Barron's Concerning the stock market, which we were discussing how strange it is that we actually follow these indices so carefully, stocks fall slightly on mixed data. I like that. That's a, you know what that means? Nothing of any significance
right.
happened to
Wall Street. They didn't know what to say.
And what happened, the lead part of the story, which I really like, says that investors were buffeted on one side by continued mix, and it goes on like this. And what happened was it states that investors realized Wall Street has now recognized that 2014 may be different from 2013.
No way.
And the subheadline should be confirmed by Sesame Street and the Count.
This year is brought to you by the number 2014.
Yes. Well, 14 is different from 13, and Sesame Street concurs.
Yes.
And we have a caller on 773-1400, more numbers, but you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Scrooge from Harker Heights.
Scrooge from Harker Heights.
Yeah, right.
Is that what you said?
That's what he said.
That's what I said, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Hello,
and I
Scrooge.
I know it's unfair that if I know your name, but you don't know my name.
Well you just told us your name.
Yeah, your name is Scrooge.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, yes, let's go with that.
Okay.
Say, and you'll probably be able to dispense with this question pretty quickly. It's the power of compound interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to a recent comment you guys made on your program / show /
whatever
broadcast,
this
whatever you
darn
call
thing
it.
Is, right?
That in China, their increase in GDP is 6%
mm-hmm.
per annum. This is arbitrary, is the way I took it, the way you said it. And 4% in this country, which is a little high, I think.
Yeah, our average, the long-term average, is around 3.
Yeah, and who knows what it really is in China. But
mm-hmm.
at any rate,
that is a good
right.
question.
Using those figures for the purpose of our
right.
the point I'm trying to make, in that I think I was left with the impression that you thought they would never catch us.
Well, it's a little more complicated. No, yeah. they probably won't ever catch us because of two major issues.
I would even say one major issue. But
one of my two is going to be your one. I'm
yeah,
sure.
yeah, I'm sure.
One is the law of diminishing returns. If you looked at the growth rate of algae in the springtime in the Gulf of Mexico, you would quickly concur that within a couple of years, the entire Earth will be algae. Except there's something called the law of diminishing returns, which means that starting from a very low point, your growth rate, all other things aside, there's a constant here, the growth rate starting from a very low point tends to be, as a percentage, much higher than it is later on. The per capita GDP of China is a fraction of that of Mexico. And as a result, they are already hitting infrastructure walls, if you will. In other words, they've got to grow their they would have to grow their infrastructure a lot to continue to grow at the level that they're currently doing.
Per capita GDP.
Right.
This is if you take their entire gross domestic product and separate it out by the number of people in there. They're averaging $9,162 per person per year.
So that's number one. Number two is something you're probably very well aware of. You don't need an economics degree to realize they've had a one-child policy for a long time.
So this is the thing that I would say is the one issue. Their demographics are backwards. Their population mm-hmm. is shrinking and shrinking at a rapid rate, which means that if you think we have a Social Security problem.
It's not actually shrinking yet, but it will.
The
Japanese population is shrinking.
The shrinkage of the economy that I'm talking about
right.
and the population of the economy is that the number of retirees is outnumbering at a faster and faster
right.
rate
yeah.
the number of workers. So the working population mm-hmm. is shrinking.
And they have, you know, there's a host of things that they're going to run into economically, demographically, in every geophysically. That they are still a developing country. Developing, that's like saying you look at a child, let's say you have a birth rate out, they will soon be the Jolly Green Giant, except for the fact that physiologically human beings can't get that big.
Yeah. If you think of a newborn, in the first, 4 months or so, they double in size. If you just project that out and say, doubling in size every 4 months, this child is going to be larger than the United States in just a few years.
Right. So do you see why we're saying that?
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I was approaching this thing strictly from a mathematical viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Malthus
does. And, of course, China has some problems, and apparently we have a lot of problems, too.
We have practically no problems compared with them.
I hope you take in consideration the fact that they've got over a billion people, and we have about a third of that.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But you look at our productivity and our education and everything else per capita.
Yeah, I understand. I understand what you're saying.
They have a population of about 1.4 billion.
Yeah.
With the mathematics of the matter, if you have our gross domestic product at about, say, 16 trillion,
okay,
and theirs at, say, 12 trillion,
mm-hmm,
taking those numbers, and I'm not real sure that's exactly right.
I'm not either. I think theirs is a bit inflated, but that's all right.
Yeah. So, anyway, taking just those figures, and they're growing at 6%, and we're growing at 4% GDP,
mm-hmm,
it won't take, in the foreseeable future, like 20 years, they'll overcome us.
Except for the fact...
The demographics is where that messes up.
Except for the fact that they have...
Demographics, is another thing. Of course, when you take in the...
And there's a curve there. You can't do...
into a discussion that goes into odd and phenomenal.
Well, no, this is the point. This is a very important thing. You mentioned compound interest. Compound interest is not a straight line. It's a curve. And it's never a simple curve. So what you do in a case like that is you determine the trend line. And I'm getting a little bit esoteric here, but this is why we said this. We say things simply on the radio a lot of times that are very, very complex issues, but we address them simply because, very frankly, on the radio, we can't get that complex. But the issue is that if you look at other nations that have done this, as well as look at the underlying factors that are causing the growth rate and how long they're going to stay there and what are going to be the restrictions coming down the road, you'll understand why, as I was reading this morning, economists have as their number one or two concern about the world economy today is the collapse of the Chinese economy.
Yeah.
And that we did, and you may remember this, to make it more simple without getting into esoteric mathematics and statistics, you probably can, do you remember the movie Back to the Future?
No.
Well, there was a movie, Back to the Future, and theoretically, this guy goes to the future, and everybody is working for the Japanese. The Japanese own the United States. And, you know, the adult form of the young man, he sees his adult self in the future, who bows before this wall-sized TV screen and says, konnichiwa, to his boss. At that point, you know, the Japanese had just bought Pebble Beach, and they'd bought the Lincoln Center, and they had bought, you know, all these places, which they promptly sold back about 5 years later at less than they paid for them. And this type of behavior has been going on for a long time. We assumed that the Japanese were going to take over the world because their GDP rates. Matter of fact, during that time period, the Nikkei average was a neat 10 times the Dow Jones Industrial Average on a very consistent basis. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay, you know where it is now?
Well, I know it's not doing well.
Well, it's way below the Dow. In other words, it has shrunk by 90% relative to the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
If we look at the size of the Chinese economy, their economy is right around $12.4 trillion a year, their GDP. Ours is right around $16 trillion a year.
Right.
So if we just did a straight line calculation, as you're talking about, and said they've got a 7.8% growth in GDP, and we've got
probably closer to 6, but yeah.
Yeah, and we've got a 3%, or, you know, right in the last quarter we were closer to 4, but we'll say 3. you still have about a $300 billion growth above what the United States is doing. So they are catching up with us by $300 billion a year. Well, yeah. You can do some simple math and say
That's my point. Just taking the math.
That $300 billion, how long would it take to get from 12.4 to 16? And they're both growing at the same time, but that's the difference there.
Well,
so
this
we're
is...
talking about between 12 and 15 years. However, this is the big however. They have run into some very severe issues that are starting to pop up.
For sure.
Wait,
and
let me,
so have we.
Well, let me address this very carefully. The growth that they're seeing, that they have seen at this rate, is manufacturing output that we have exported to them. Well, we've reversed that in the Great Recession. Less was being exported, and with the advent of some new technologies, even less is being exported. Mm-hmm. 3D printing is going to do to our manufacturing capabilities something that will cause major crisis in China in the next 10 years.
And this is, I want to throw something else in here. If you really want to dig into this, and we enjoy this, this disgusting, geeky stuff that we do.
We can go at this all day long.
What percentage of the Chinese economic growth is a direct result of American business activity in China.
Correct. And you look
and then you realize that it's as their middle class arises and the wages start to go up in China with the GDP, something really fascinating, and you'll see this sometime in the next year or two, you'll see the headlines. The Chinese labor is getting too expensive.
This is why
we will tend to pull out of there, as will Europe. And we're already doing this, by the way. I don't know. IBM has done huge layoffs in India recently.
Yeah, this is why I say 3D printing. If we can have a computer print out an object without having to have a lot of people stand and put the thing together and with very dexterous fingers for very low costs, this is the same problem that you get if you raise the minimum wage here. The vast majority of people working at McDonald's will be out of work in the next 5 years if you raise the minimum wage to $11, because you can put a machine in there to check the temperature of the patty and flip it, and you can put a machine in there that you walk in just like you do at the grocery store these days, and you swipe your card and you choose your order, and one person can do the work now of six or seven people in the kitchen. The same is true in that China has been bringing all these people out of the rice paddies, out of the farming and agriculture area.
Behind an ox.
And training them to put shoes together or to put parts together and tighten screws.
Right.
That does not translate to computer ability. It does not translate into innovation and to new creation of ideas. In fact, if you look at innovation and creativity in China, it's non-existent. So this is the third leg of the thing, that the reason why India is closer to this, but they're still in issue, and that is intellectual property rights. The fact is that
in the realm of anecdotal.
I like anecdotal better.
Yeah, I think it's good. We'll make a new word.
I think anecdotal is a new word.
Yeah, I like
from
that.
I'm inventing new words.
That's like strategery. Are you from Crawford? Anyway, never mind.
His name is Scrooge.
Scrooge from Crawford.
Intuitively, and because I've dealt with Chinese quite a bit, these guys are somebody to watch.
Now,
my original call was about was strictly a mathematical model.
Right.
How compound interest is very powerful. That was all there was to it. Now, I know that everything else can happen.
You know, according to the mathematical model that you're using, though, is famous because it was used by a guy named Malthus. Are you familiar with him?
It's worth looking up.
He determined that the rate of population growth was a higher percentage than the rate of food growth, and that by the mid-1800s, the entire world would starve to death.
Well,
I don't think it happened, though.
No.
You can't just accept these models. And
this is why economics becomes so complex.
You can't depend on it because of these different variables that come into play. Understanding that, but anyway, I've always said the Chinese are the one to keep your eye on.
They were after the Japanese.
Yeah, and the next will be the Indians.
And maybe it'll be the Chileans or the Mexicans.
I'm going to hit this issue one more time because I don't feel like I hit it very well.
Okay.
Intellectual property rights are fundamentally important to the success of an economy, unless they're just going to be a subsidiary economy to another one. Until in China you can come up with an invention that you can actually announce to the world and create without expecting somebody to come in and take it from you or come in at gunpoint and make you create the thing that you invented for their profit, which is a very normal thing in China right now. Until they can figure out how to regulate intellectual property, there is no way that intellectual activity will boom. You can't create things and reap the benefit in China.
You strike me, sir, as a thinker. So I'm going to throw a new thought out for you, okay?
I should come over to where, Salado?
Yes, you probably should. In 1993, a Nobel Prize was given to a gentleman by the name of Douglas North.
Oh, he's worth reading.
He is one of the founders of a new form of economics. It's called New Institutional Economics.
Not to be confused with institutional economics. It's a very different thing.
Okay. But the point is that he said, unless a socioeconomic system, and China is a socioeconomic system like the United States is, unless that system has dynamic, healthy institutions as its foundation, it is doomed to collapse. Without the institutions, growth creates greater and greater instability, whereas in a country like the United States, because of the very dynamic, fluid institutions we have, but very, very well established fluid institutions, growth tends to produce stability in the United States. It tends to produce instability literally everywhere outside of what's called the Anglo-American socioeconomic system.
The act of new technology, the cheapening of information, the ease of traveling, causes institutions that are restrictive to lose stability. And that was a lot of big words to say. When we can talk to each other without having the government involved in our conversations, the government starts to lose stability. Mm-hmm. Unless the government has flexibility to change every couple of years.
Well, not just the government.
The institution around the government, you know, as well. The economic institutions.
Let me give you an example. There is no institutional set of accountants in China. Did you know that? Doesn't exist.
Say that one more time.
In the United States, we trust a financial statement from a company because there is a CPA firm, a firm of certified published accountants, who are partners normally.
I've seen that go up in flames.
See, that's the point. It went up in flames once.
And the liability of the companies involved.
And the company ceased to exist. But today, if Ernst & Young signs off on your financial statement, the government of the United States and all the states and the New York Stock Exchange accept that as gospel, okay? And that's a critical institution.
They don't have that for their whole economy. They don't have that for an individual company.
In China, there are no CPAs.
I think our conversation is going to expand.
Yeah, we're almost out of time for the hour.
No, I mean, the point is we have institutions many of which we started with in 1776. We have an independent judiciary in the United States. They don't have one in China.
We have a military that is not expected to have its own political voice. They don't have that in China. The military has a very strong political opinion about what happens
and when it happens. And we have these independent institutions that have their power delegated to them by the government, and then they have it.
Yeah, and in our system, if a person violates those rules and regulations, mm-hmm. then we put them in jail, perhaps.
Not necessarily. We generally bankrupt them.
Yes. In the terms of white-collar crime, we just take all their money.
In China, of course, they just march them out and shoot them. That's the end of that.
Well, yeah, that's a little different. Anyway, okay, so we've got a break, and thank you very much for your call. Very thoughtful comments. And you certainly are welcome to come by and say hello sometime.
I will, certainly will.
Okay, we'll talk to you later. And just tell us you're Scrooge, okay?
Yes, we have met Scrooge.
Scrooge from Harker Heights. Scrooge, you know, when you put from in German behind a person's name, it's von. And
Scrooge
that means
von Heights.
You would be nobility, and normally it's von, like Kasselberg or something like that. Well, that's the name of a town. So if it's Scrooge von Harker Heights, that makes him nobility. He's of the nobility of Harker Heights.
I think if you want to be able to say that most, the fact that people own property in the United States makes them nobility.
Right.
So
everybody in the town is nobility, but I think it's really cool. Anyways, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're running low on time. Time is going to zero for the first hour.
Yes.
But this is really the first hour. This is just an hour, but it is our first hour on this February 22nd, 2014. We could get esoteric again here real quick. But if you would like to contact us off the air and leave a recorded message on the weekend or actually speak to human beings during the week, we do have a telephone number, and that telephone number locally is 947-1111. It's a real hard one to remember, 947, and this is, I got this number so I could remember it, 1111. And then we have another one, too.
Toll-free, you can reach us at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. That's the same voicemail. You can also email us individually at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. That's the Personal Wealth Coach. You can go to our webpage as well, tpwc.com.
Webpage? We have a webpage?
My nose is dubby.
Okay.
Or you can go to thepersonalwealthcoach.com and you can listen to podcasts. You can read about our philosophy and approach. The podcasts, I must say, we have to give you a medical warning, can lead to psychiatric problems.
Do you realize podcast is similar to dialing the phone? It's a complete, nobody, who has an iPod anymore?
Well, it's a pod. It doesn't necessarily have to be an iPod.
But it came from the concept of iPod. You could link your iPod. You do?
I do.
In museum?
It isn't. It's in my car, but, you know.
Oh, okay. Well.
Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Fair Balance, your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.